Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Oh my gosh! Mary put her hands over her ears. I just can't stand to hear another news report.
I know, her husband Ted offered, flipping the dial. Let's change the station, just have some soothing music while we're driving.
Thanks, honey. Mary angled her passenger seat back a bit and closed her eyes. It must be such a nightmare to be in a combat situation and have to decide how to treat people who have been trying to kill you, but who are now your prisoners. What must these young soldiers be going through?
It's a tough world out there, Ted concurred.
Makes you wonder, Mary remarked, just how to teach kids the kinds of positive values that will stay with them under stress.
Yeah, Ted responded. Makes me wonder how we're doing with Jan and Michael. What would they do in a few years in such dire circumstances? Pretty scary, huh?
From a parent's perspective, what can we do to help a child maintain conscience under stress? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has worked with people who face just these kinds of circumstances. Harvey Follander was in the U.S. Army Reserve and retired as a colonel after a 32-year career. This included active duty plus 16 overseas active reserve assignments. His daughter is making her career in the U.S. Air Force. He wants to make sure that you understand he's not an expert in what we will discuss. He has not been in combat, nor is he representing the military or speaking for them. These are all his personal opinions. Harvey's the father of two grown children. Welcome to Parents' Perspective.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here with you.
What would you say is the most difficult psychological adjustment young soldiers have to make when they find themselves on active duty in a combat situation?
Well, the most difficult adjustment is to realize that it doesn't mean that you're a nice person who's kind to animals. There are people out there who are trying to kill you and whose job is to kill you unless you kill them first or protect yourself, protect your comrades, or achieve an objective. So it's very difficult to be there, and it's full of horror. There's no situation or experience we have in the civilian world that's quite like it. And if you aren't killed, you may be maimed for life. You may lose limbs or eyes. Most Americans aren't very inclined to kill. And we know from research that many soldiers in combat, even under very serious conditions, don't even fire their weapons.
That's interesting. So people have a tendency to sort of freeze up when they're confronted with something that's so vastly different than what their experience is?
Right. They have nothing that quite prepares them for that, and so they don't react. As long as nobody's actually engaging them hand to hand, they just chill out and stay out of the action.
That's interesting. So what does the military do to help combat that tendency?
Well, the soldiers are trained to follow standard operating procedures, and those procedures are designed to result in the best outcome for the whole group. Some of these procedures require socializing the group to a critical mass to rise above their own selfish concerns and embracing the premise that the best outcome for the unit is an outcome where everything comes out well for everybody, instead of measuring, how is this for me? And that enables people to make some sacrifice for their own best interest in embracing the best interests of the group. And this, we believe, results in the best outcome for everybody because it's as a group that they survive. You know the expression, divide and conquer. So that's what we try to prevent, the division of the unit, so that it won't be conquered. The Marines have an expression that they use that encapsulates a lot of this. They say, no man left behind. This gives their troops the confidence that they'll be taken care of no matter what happens to them. And so they become a little less self-centered and operate for the best interests of the group.
Well, so it sounds like they go into a military situation and then, because of the exercises that they go through, are trained to form sort of a cohesive whole that they feel an integral part of.
Right. So they see that each action that they do and every job that they have is part of a whole strategy, and that what they're doing on their own isn't going to accomplish very much. For example, some soldiers may be sent around to envelop the enemy so that the enemy has no other chance of escape. But by themselves, they're not doing much, except they're waiting for the enemy that's getting then trapped into moving in their direction. So it works as a team.
What about the psychological effects on those who stay behind or are deployed but don't see combat?
Well, it's hard for them to understand what their contribution might be to the fight and to the nation because they're not seeing anything at that particular time. You know, watching television and all, we've been trained to expect some kind of decisive outcome within 30 or 60 minutes. And when something good doesn't happen, sometimes it gets frustrating, and sometimes the people who are experiencing that can't go on because they just lose the motivation to continue after a long period. I mean, and you see that in the population at large as well. If things don't go well immediately, we lose interest and lose support.
I guess it's sort of instant gratification is what our society has been about, and that's not necessarily something that's helpful in a combat situation or in a situation where you have to work with other people for an outcome that's sort of down the road.
Harvey, if you were a parent of a young soldier about to be deployed, what would you remind him or her? In other words, the little kids we're talking about raising are growing up to become soldiers. Now what?
Right. That's always the possibility, and it's best to prepare them for adversities, whether in combat or just in life. So I'd advise the children, or as they become soldiers, not to cut corners. Procedures, in this case military procedures and policies, are established to maximize the likelihood of the desired outcomes. And they should be followed because they've been proven over time to be effective. And sometimes it may not seem obvious right away, but, you know, these are practiced and tried, and they do work. I'd also advise them to rely on the chain of command. After all, the commanders are motivated to preserve all the soldiers so they accomplish the unit's mission. You know, they're not frivolous about the soldiers. I mean, they're in their protection, and they're there to survive and to work another day. In this case, you know, my young soldier is my daughter. I'd remind her to wear body armor.
That's pretty important.
And to be wary of untested civilians on the battle area. Now, you know, that's like in life. You run into people and you don't really know their motivations and what they're trying to do to you or get from you. They need to be tested and you need to be wary of them.
This would seem to me to be a real problem because as we're bringing up our children and we're trying to instill values, we are trying to teach our children to reach out to other people and to be helpful. It goes almost exactly in direct opposition, but I guess the idea is if you're in a crisis situation, self-preservation kicks in and you have to look at things very differently.
Right, and the situation is quite extreme because, you know, at least half the people out there really are your enemy and trying to kill you, and you don't know how many of the others are. And, you know, in a situation in a foreign land where it's not crystal clear who's on whose side, you know, this is the difficulty. And, you know, with our children, we're, despite trying to raise them to be outreaching and friendly, we need to raise them to be cautious about who they approach and who they trust. So these cautions apply in all areas. In fact, you know, you're making me see that combat isn't so different from regular life. It's just a little more extreme.
Well, I guess that's true. We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion of conscience under stress.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with retired Army Colonel Harvey Follander about conscience under stress. What do young soldiers have to say about the moral and ethical dilemmas that they have faced in military situations. We're now sort of, all right, we're giving them what they need, and then they have to go out there and figure out how to apply all this stuff and when to apply it.
Well, as I told you, I've not spoken to young soldiers in combat, but we all know the stories of soldiers in various wars in heavy combat and continuous danger on all sides who become uncharacteristically cruel to innocent bystanders and opposing soldiers. This was written about, probably most extensively, about the wars in the Pacific and Vietnam, where it's reported that American soldiers were collecting body parts, and we certainly know of tortures perpetrated by the opposing forces. And these people, you know, probably very nice at home. I mean, this is often the case. You know, we see this in criminal justice. People who we know to be perpetrators of serious crimes are fine people to their families and their community. So does this mean they're psychotic? Well, I think not, but we don't really understand why people change. One of the things I suspect is the intense pressure of combat, where for long periods of time, people's lives are on the line and in jeopardy. And this does something to you, and it makes you react in ways that are perhaps unpredictable.
As a parent, hearing this stuff, it's quite frightening because you think, okay, is my child going to turn into some terrible person who tortures other people and that kind of thing? And so is there any advice you would give for parents to sort of inoculate their kids against this kind of tendency that seems to come up?
Well, I don't know if we want to inoculate them, because we don't want them to be robots. We want them to do what needs to be done because it's right and they're motivated. We can help them feel that their efforts are appreciated and their concerns are valid and shared. Our children can experience pressures in values-laden, stressful situations in or out of the military. And if we can help them learn to think clearly and logically, those are valuable skills, especially under stress. Anticipating the situations they may be in, discussing those possibilities, and practicing for possible situations can also reduce the pressure. And again, that applies to civilian life as well as military life and combat.
That's interesting. So you could go through with your kids some obvious stressful situations, like if a stranger comes up to you and you're walking home by yourself, or some things that would actually apply to them growing up, and ask them to do some thinking under what would be a stressful situation.
And like, you know, how to handle a bully and other things that happen to you in ordinary life.
I think you're making a clear and important differentiation here, because you're saying we don't want our young people who are in the military or our young people who are growing up to be in the military to be robots, but we do want them to follow the rules once they're in the military. We want them to obey the command.
Right, but we want them to use their initiative so that they can make the most out of the situation. And in the American military, we do expect them to use initiative and not simply follow orders, but to do more than follow orders. But the orders, it must be remembered, are issued to help the unit survive and accomplish its objective, and we expect that those objectives are worthy.
How would you say a soldier's upbringing is relevant to his military service beyond we as parents teaching our children right from wrong?
Well, an individual develops a level of acceptance in the judgment of others and the concept of subordination of his own welfare to the good of the group. Of course, this applies very strongly in the military situation, because it's the good of the group that's paramount, and we expect with the good of the group and the survival and the success of the group that the individual will succeed as well. Combat history is full of stories of individual sacrifice for the good of the group, and their motivation is complex, but it's sometimes instinctive. The background will possibly cause them to consider these questions, which will be important to each individual. Are we in a just cause? Do we actually know who the enemy is? Do we know why they are fighting us? or what they are trying to accomplish. Are we treating noncombatants humanely? Are we treating enemy prisoners of war humanely? And am I fighting for a country that appreciates me as a citizen? These questions, no matter what we try to instill in the soldiers, will come to their minds. And if we as a nation and a military can provide the right answers by our actions and our examples, then we'll have a more effective fighting force and a better adjusted group of soldiers to do the work.
They're really overwhelming questions. You think of how young people are when they first enter the military, facing these overwhelming issues.
Well, and also hearing questions to which the answer may be no. We're not in a just cause, for example, you know, just to pick the first one, or am I thought of in my country as an integral, full-fledged citizen? And the answer may be no. We have a lot of people who are from minority groups in the military who don't feel that they have been given a non-discriminatory environment at home, or, you know, you could pick any one of these and have issues like that, and then what?
Well, that could degrade the efficiency of the fighting force. And so as commanders of the force, it's our obligation to make sure those answers can be answered in a positive way.
As parents, we want to instill in our children our positive feelings about this country. And any negative feelings that we have, we can certainly put under the rubric of these are things that need to be changed, you know, grow up and become a productive citizen and work for change. I don't know how that translates to do stuff for the good of the group, follow the orders, if you're in a military situation, however.
Well, it all poses a real dilemma within the military and without. That's correct.
Okay.
I'd also add that with the free access to so many sources of information, such as CNN, web searches, and email, the influences of other people, as well as movies and TV, in addition to expectations that technology can solve any problem, soldiers are asking tough questions these days, and they're expecting quick, decisive victory. The result can be that when we're not in combat, the work is not very rewarding, and when we are in combat, nothing is clean and clear as we expect. So this makes it very hard for the young soldier to know how to react and know what to do. And that's why, of course, we try to train them and retrain them in standard operating procedures. So there is less need to think about what it is we're doing, but we like to make it so that they have a procedure that they're fully comfortable with and they can follow it. Again, because it saves lives and helps accomplish the mission.
The idea is that what they should do under a stressful situation should be so ingrained in them that they just do it and they don't have to think about, well, do I agree with this? Do I not agree with this?
Exactly.
Uh-huh. And it's interesting. I think our whole concept of combat has undergone a tremendous change, and I think we're probably all still in flux, certainly, as the bulk of the non-military among us in civilian life, because certainly in the first Gulf War, it turned out to a lot of us to be sort of like a video game. You would press buttons and then things would happen and nobody was really in combat very much. And I think a lot of us thought that going into another such war, it would be more of the same. And I think it's been a big shock to almost everybody that it's been quite different.
Well, as I said earlier, combat is horrible and it has grisly results. And we hope in each instance where we undertake it that it will provide us with solutions that we cherish and accept and desire.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion of conscience under stress.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $10 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with retired Army Colonel Harvey Follander about conscience under stress. Would you have any further advice for parents who are very busily working to instill values in their children?
Well, the attributes of good citizenship and achievement apply to the military as well as civilian life. It's vastly different in combat, where we mostly want our children to survive intact. Parents should support independence, good values, open-mindedness, knowing when it's appropriate to question and when it's time to follow directions. All characteristics that are valuable in all aspects of life. Once their children are grown and in the military, differing opinions may cause conflict, but children should always know that their parents support what they're doing and want them to do what they need to do, but to be happy and healthy.
The crux of what you're saying is really one of the tough things about parenting. The idea is when to have some initiative and when to say, all right, I'll follow my orders, I'll do what I'm supposed to do, which I guess a lot of it is what we get in school as well. When it's time to raise your hand and say, wait a minute, I have a question, or what about this idea? And when it's time to, you know, put your pencil down or do whatever it is you're supposed to do and follow the orders. And that's a pretty tough call, I guess, for kids growing up all the way through.
That's very difficult. But in the military situation, the preponderance of decision should be in following the directions and the orders and the guidance of the commanders, because they see a bigger picture, they have more information, and they know what we're trying to accomplish on a larger scale. So I'm not suggesting that children apply the same questioning in combat that they would outside. It would be much more dangerous to themselves and to their comrades if they were to do so. So I'm not suggesting that there are major problems with the young soldiers. In fact, on the other hand, I think young soldiers today are proud to serve and to make a difference in the world.
And I must say, certainly, as all of us who are parents, we are all very proud of all of these young people and know, without having been in the same situation ourselves, what a really conflicted kind of situation it is for all of these youngsters who are far from home and under tremendous stress and trying their best to do the job that they were sent to do.
Harvey, what resources would you suggest for listeners who would like to follow up on this discussion?
Well, the Department of Defense provides a website with many links to information supporting military families, relatives, transition, relocation, health care, aid, emergency relief, children, and other issues and situations. That website is www.defenselink.mil/sites/f.html/family.
I think you better repeat that.
www.defenselink.mil/sites/f.html/family. And another site is www.psychology.com, and that's about preparing for stress in any situation.
Well, you have helped all of us as parents who are worried about our children preparing for stress in life or stress in their jobs or stress in the military. And so, Harvey Follander, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 241. Tell us if you can what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Washington, D.C. with Kids is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. We'd like to remind you about some important toll-free numbers for parents and kids. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, 1-800-THE-LOST. That's 1-800-THE-LOST. And ask for the Family Advocacy Unit if you need to make this call. A website that is a very good one for families to know is www.missingkids.com. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.